There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on DubaiEye1038.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Grill. We're broadcasting, fingers crossed, live from Barasti, where the game is always on. Those are the thoughts of Martin O'Neill. Ireland with an impressive victory, a 2-0 victory yesterday in terms of their latest World Cup qualifier. We've got more about the World Cup qualifiers coming your way in just a few moments' time. Talking of Ireland, that's the Republic of Ireland with that victory yesterday in the World Cup qualifiers. We'll be hearing from Northern Ireland boss as well, who still got a mathematical chance of qualifying for the World Cup. We'll have more details on that one. But talking of Ireland, big game in the world of rugby just kicked off over in Ireland.
Yeah, it's just kicked off at Aviva Stadium in Dublin. It's Irish derby. It's Leinster hosting Munster. Many years of rivalry between those two. Well, lots of closely fought tussles. So that's the first of three matches today in the Pro 14. Later on, we see in Italy Treviso playing the Southern Kings, the South African team. And then the Ospreys will face the Scarlets in a Welsh derby. But all eyes are focused on Aviva Stadium at the moment, Tom.
Yeah, and one man who's been there and done that on more occasions than one is Dennis Hurley, the former Irish and Munster back, who, of course, has been a great friend of the show since he moved out here to the UAE. He's been contributing to local rugby here after an illustrious career wearing the colours for Ireland and Munster. He joins us live on the line now from the safety of his sofa, where he's watching the game at the moment. Good afternoon to you, Den.
Afternoon, gents. How are we?
We're not too bad at all. That, I've always wanted to ask this, you know, for a man who's played in so many games in Munster Leinster games, what's it like sitting on a sofa and watching it?
You want to throw on the boots, don't you, and get out there. They're the kind of days I used to love. You know, with I think the supporters, obviously, it's massive for them, but I think, you know, it's quite special being part of the environment when in the build-up and lead-up to those games. Yeah, I've played a number of them over the years, and never got sick of them. You know, really looked forward to them. Everyone wanted to be involved for those games. You know, you look at the selection even this week, as you know, from management side, they have to realise that, you know, Europe next week, that it has to be their main focus. They need to have guys that potentially could be up for spots on the starting team, or making sure that guys who would probably be backups on the sub-bench need to get game time. You know, and from supporter side, they want to see the best 15 that each province has to offer. You know, but I think there's quality across the field today again, and, you know, I think so far it started quite lively, and both sides have points of real positive in their attack and a few areas possibly that the other side will be looking to exploit. Already we've seen that the 10-12 channel of Munster with Keighley at 10 and Blaine all the other out half at 12. Leinster seem to target it early on, and they're making yards through there, which is a little bit of a worry, but I think across both teams there's a lot to look forward to this afternoon.
Munster and Leinster in their own right powerhouses of the game in European rugby at the moment. Was there a different type of intensity though when the two teams came together?
Yeah, there was. I mean, you're looking at when Leinster weren't, I suppose, at the top of Europe where Munster were back in the early 2000s. You know, they were very envious of where Munster were. And then that developed a nice bitterness between the two provinces, and I suppose that lives and breathes between supporters. There's a lot of Munster people live and work in the heart of Leinster in Dublin, and vice versa. There's a good number that work around the province of Munster. So there's always a bit of rivalry, bit of banter. It's usually nice kind of banter. It never gets out of hand, but I think it still makes the whole environment of the game a bit tasty. You know, that people do look forward to these games, and you know, like at the end of the day, I suppose they try and support their team the best that they can. And you know, the bitterness at the end of the day is more about with it for the players in the squad, just trying to get guys from their province onto the Irish squad. And that's really the battle that's on the field for the players today. Especially look at, you know, I think in the pack in the front row, you know, you have Dave Kikoy and John Ryan, who probably, you know, they'd be looking to be the backups, if not starting for Joe Schmidt's selection in the November series. And you have, you know, two Lions props are starting for Leinster, and you have, you know, like six quality back rows then between the two teams that are on the field at the moment. So there alone lies, you know, plenty of rivalries on the field for players alone. It's an opportunity to show light, you know, against guys who are potentially you're competing with at, you know, for positions at, for the Irish squad. And these are the games where you get the opportunity to really rub noses with them and test yourself against them. And I think that's where the real rivalry is on the field between those players.
Dennis, I'm just looking through the lineups of both teams there. Lots of players, as you just said, rightly competing for Irish national places. There's a lot of players who also starred on the recent British and Irish Lions down to New Zealand. Some of the battles there are going to be massive today. But two players that are going to have an influence is obviously Conor Murray for Munster at halfback, taking on, steering the Munster team around the field, getting them with that box kicking, he does, but also taking on Johnny Sexton, his Irish teammate, at fly half for Leinster. That's going to be a key battle between the Battle of the Halves today.
Yeah, it is going to be a big thing. I mean, the one thing that Conor really is very good at is his distribution. He really adds, I think, you know, the speed to the attack. You know, it is interesting to see that the selection they've gone with has been three out halves pretty much on the Munster backline. You know, which I suppose for the attacking and kicking threats, it adds a lot. It gives options both sides of the ruck. So if it's a midfield ruck, that should open up both sides of the pitch to attack from. And again, though, you know, you look at Henshaw and Sexton there together. I think, you know, they're quite combative as well. So they'll be looking at Ian Keighley and Tyler Bland all opposite them, and maybe just looking for their path to give them, you know, some bit of go forward ball to play off of and really attack that channel. And I think that they do have the quality in the back three as well to, you know, if they start dominating that area and they get the Munster backline moving backwards. We saw there early in the start of the game, even that's off a line out. Munster are in trouble when they're going backwards. You know, so I think there's a lot of different different plays, you know, happening, I think, on the field. And it is a game of chess at the end of the day. I mean, you know, you got to keep a foothold in the game. You've got to start getting points on the board as early as you can. But as regards those two players, they can only play with the guys around them at the same time. But, you know, the real fight is up front. You know, it is going to come down to lineouts. It is going to come down to scrums. And then the maul. Both teams have strong mauls. So, I mean, any soft penalties given away, you know, around the halfway line, you're going to be looking at trying to hold the opposition out for at least a minimum of 3 points. And I think that's where the game is going to swing a lot of the time in this match.
Dennis, one player who's not playing today, Sean O'Brien from Leinster. We watched the final, we all did as a group, watched the final test match when the British and Irish Lions were in New Zealand recently. Sean O'Brien took part of that series. He had some pretty controversial comments to say in the last couple of weeks, saying that if it wasn't for the coaching staff, the Lions probably should have won 3-0. Just want to get your thoughts on those comments and where did they come from? So close to what many people see is quite a successful tour by the British and Irish Lions.
Well, I even think myself, you know, from watching what was going on, I was really, really disappointed, I think, from the beginning of the tour. You know, I said at the time is that you're selecting the best players that you can from five nations and you're putting them together. Sorry, four nations, I should say. But you're putting them together onto the field, you know, so you have a bit of a, you know, it's a novel thing. It's once every 4 years you get this opportunity to get guys who have that real quality, the abilities that they have, the skill sets that they have, to put on the field you get to play with it a little bit. Give them the bit of room, the bit of, you know, they need a bit of structure, yes, but you give them the flexibility to play within that structure. And I was disappointed because it from their opening games, it just looked flat. It looked like there was no bit of spark. There was, you know, the game plan just seemed to be route one rugby, and it wasn't what, you know, as a spectator of rugby over the years, it's not what you would expect of a British and Irish Lions team. So I would understand if, you know, if Sean was even, you know, obviously being on tour and he's making his points, I think, on the basis of he wanted to see more coming from the tour, from the coaching staff. I mean, they're put in a position, they're given a role, and, you know, within that role, they have time to prepare and they have time to produce a game plan that would suit the fit of players that they're picking. You know, and I can really understand where he's coming from, and I think it is actually, you know, a brave thing, because a lot of guys are, you know, they have contracts, they have, you know, things to be worrying about, and they don't want this, you know, I suppose, out in the media, you know, in certain scenarios, that it kind of takes away, you know, from what they're actually doing from week to week on the pitch, you know, and I'd stand to his side and say, yeah, I'd actually agree with him. I think, you know, the tour on that front was a failure, because I think, you know, even from just hearing from some of his thoughts, that some of the players nearly took hold of the game plan by the end of the tour, and I think that is really, really disappointing. If you're picking, you know, let's say management staff, long before you even start picking players, if you're picking a management staff, they're given the role to actually, I suppose, put together a, you know, a process and a plan and develop that, you know, with bringing in the players that they're going to bring in to produce what they put down at the beginning, with their goals, their, you know, what they want to achieve. And if that doesn't fit right, and it didn't seem to work on the tour, and we did see an adaptation of the actual game plan, went from route one rugby to a bit more expansive. And I remember watching the first test, and they were trying to play rugby that they hadn't played previously, which, you know, I didn't know what to make of it at the time. But now I can see that the players obviously started to say, listen, we need to restructure how we're going to play this, because if we try and play route one against the All Blacks, they're going to annihilate us. Yeah. And yes, in that first test, they made a lot of mistakes, but that was from lack of practice at that test pressure, which they got in that first test. Hence why they were able to use that learnings into the second test. And, you know, I suppose, unfortunately, didn't finish it off in the third test. But they caught the All Blacks as well. And, you know, the All Blacks weren't great in the second test, and they were okay in the third test. So, I mean, there was definitely opportunity that if the Lions had played, you know, the type of game plan they ended up playing, I think from the beginning of the tour, they might have been in real, you know, strong position to actually win the series. But, you know, again, that might have brought up the All Blacks performance as well. You know, so sometimes you play to the performance of the team opposite you, and, you know, I think the first test, the All Blacks found it a little bit too easy, and then they took the foot off the pedal, as they say, possibly a little bit, and that led to some of their mistakes creeping into their game, and that made the third test, I suppose, such a knife edge as it was. So, yeah, like it's a strong topic. You can guarantee you're not going to see that management staff for the next tour anyway. That's definite.
The ramifications continue. Listen, we won't interrupt your rugby watching anymore. Enjoy the moment. Just before you go, though, Dennis, tell us what the score is in the game.
I think Leinster might pick this one because of the pack. So I'm going to say 22-19, tight one.
Keep an eye on that one. Dennis, all the best. Thanks so much indeed to you, former Ireland and Munster man Dennis Hurley, joining us live on the line. This is a game that's got plenty of rivalry. We don't need to tell you that.
With the red of Munster and the blue of Leinster. Now this could break for Munster. They've certainly got numbers there. He's the major threat now.
That is brilliant!
Leinster have their try.
Really encouraging and
aggressive start from Munster. Powerful looking Munster side.
Roll out the red or believe in blue.
Munster against Leinster underway at the moment. Mark Archer, score update.
Yeah, 20 minutes gone. Leinster have jumped into the early lead. They lead Leinster lead Munster 7 points in all. Try to Rory O'Loughlin and has been converted by Johnny Sexton. So Leinster 7, Munster 0.
Barnet against Coventry finished in the English Football League. No goals in that one. Finished goalless. Let's go local sport. Our man Ross Christ all over it.
That's right, Tommy and Mark. If I started telling you names like The Beast, Brain Freeze, Boot Camp, Twin Peaks, no, I would not be talking about
former
my ex-girlfriends. Beat me to it. Ding, ding, boom. We'll be here till 6 o'clock at Barasti Beach. I would be talking about, of course, the Desert Warrior Challenge, the Dubai Desert Warrior Challenge in their fourth edition. I believe in just under, 12 days, 13 hours, 36 minutes, and 19 seconds. And I am joined now by one of the hardest working race directors here in the Middle East, Mr. Troy Gillam. Troy, thanks for coming on the show, buddy.
Ross, thanks for having me. And Tom and Mark, great to see you.
Yeah, it's been a while, bud. It's been a while. Last time I saw you, you were out in the desert. You were sweating. We were all kind of sweating, having a good time out there, I think, in the third edition of the Desert Warrior Challenge. And now we are here to the fourth edition in Dubai in 12 days' time. Registration still open. We'll get to that in a second. What can we expect different from previous Warrior Challenges to this one?
Yeah, good question. Obviously, every event we have, we want to keep our warriors excited and anticipating new and exciting obstacles. So for sure, they can expect a couple of big and bold obstacles that are going to scare them. We like to adapt a few of our old obstacles and do a few modifications just to improve and then once again give the warriors something different. But if you're coming down to the event, expect to see big and bold and expect to get sweaty.
Now, I know we just briefly talked about it off air. Give us a little bit of an overview of the event, the distances, kind of the challenges, what the type of mentality of a warrior needs to be to going into this event.
So we have a 5-kilometer fearless warrior. That's sort of your entry-level adult course, and that's about 35% of our participants enter into that one. Then we have our ultimate warrior, which is a 10-kilometer event, 22 obstacles. It's a tough event because it's on soft sand, for predominantly the whole course. We do have a mixture of terrain. We've got high dunes that people will have to run up and down. They're about 20 meters up. So you can expect some sore calf muscles, some sore legs, that's for sure, at the end of the day. But we've got plenty of water obstacles, ice-cold water obstacles, a couple of them on the course to cool you down, and lots of refreshments in the village to be a reward at the end.
Now, I understand also this time and in previous times, I haven't made it to any of the sessions, but there are some warrior training sessions leading up to this. So you've had a lot of registrants who've registered for the race a long time ago, and they wanted to come in tip-top shape for the Desert Warrior Challenge?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, we're an event that's on one day, but really part of the message that we're trying to push is that it's much more than just a single day. We're trying to create the warrior movement, which is really about getting fit, getting healthy, and just having some fun with your friends. So any person who is registered for the event, we give you 6 weeks free training every Friday at the Warehouse Gym. We're now 5 weeks into that. Our next Friday, obviously, is the last one. We're actually going to do that on JBR Beach. We're going to put you in the water. We're going to get you swimming. We're going to get you running up and down the beach, doing some Baywatch moments and having a bit of fun. But the idea, obviously, is we don't want people to be intimidated by the course. Yes, it's a difficult course. Yes, it's challenging, but really anyone can do it. So this is a step to help people get ready for that.
And speaking of the course, Dubai is a big emirate. Where actually is the course located?
So the course is out at Dubai Land District. It's a really cool piece of land. It was meant to be Universal Studios a long time ago, okay. Pre-crisis. And now it's basically a theme park for our warriors. So it's a big piece of land out there behind Dubai Outlet Mall. We'll be releasing the map on how to get yourself there in the coming week. But essentially, it's right out near 117. You can't miss it.
Every time we see you, a couple of times a year, you're coming and we're talking about the growth of extreme races, particularly the Desert Warrior Challenges. What's next? I know you're doing a couple of year now. You're spread throughout the region. What's coming up on the schedule?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it still is massively exploding globally. OCR is the fastest growing sport worldwide. It's on the table to be an Olympic sport in 2 Olympics time. So we're really quite positive as far as the future goes. So we're pushing within the GCC to get our events out within the GCC. Next year we hope to be in 2 different countries, on top of the UAE. We will continue to do two courses a year in the UAE. One will be in Dubai and one will be in another Emirates. We did an event earlier this year in Ajman, which was fantastic. We were the first ever obstacle course worldwide to incorporate a zip line. So we had an unharnessed zip line over a marina, which was fantastic, a lot of fun. And that's the sort of thing that we want to keep doing, keep sort of pushing boundaries, giving people a little bit of a scare factor so that when they finish the course, they've got a massive excitement and elation.
Troy, a race like the Desert Warrior Challenge in any race in this big of epic proportion isn't possible without sponsors and sponsorship. Who are some of the partners that you've teamed up with for the fourth edition in Dubai?
Yeah, it's absolutely not possible without the sponsors and partners. So first, hats off to ARN for being our media partner, which is Dubai Eye's parent company. So thanks very much, guys. But yeah, we've got a great team of sponsors and partners from Arla Protein, Harlequin Tents, Dubai Sports Council is in there. Monviso Water, which is from an Italian water, which is fantastic. OSN, ITP Publishing, Warehouse Gym is obviously our training partner. We've got Cubes, a company from Ajman, which helps us with containers for the event. Maypi, which is an industrial supplies company here, chemical supplies. So it's crucial that we get those sponsors on board. Obviously, yes, it is a business. We have to be a viable business to continue. So without that sponsorship, it simply isn't possible.
For all our listeners right now sitting on their couch, driving in their cars, maybe thinking that this is the thing for them. They have a 5K, they have a children's race, they have the 10K Ultimate Warrior. How can they get involved and how can they sign up?
So we've still got registrations open. It's all through our website, which is desertwarriorchallenge.com. Just quickly go onto the site, hit the register now button and it will take you to the link. It's quite easy to follow. As Ross said, we've got a junior course, which is a 1 and 2 kilometer junior course for 6-year-olds up to 15-year-olds. We've got a great offer going that if you sign up as an adult, as a parent, you get 50% off for your children. Trying to get make it really a family affair, getting everyone out there having some fun. So yeah, sign up online. We'll be open for registrations right up until the day before. If we have any space, you can sign up on the day, but typically it fills up.
Troy, Race Director, Desert Warrior Challenge, desertwarriorchallenge.com/registration if you want to get involved. I can tell you from personal experience being at the last couple one of these, this is one of the best races, obstacle course challenge races in the Middle East, if not the world. So I look forward to seeing you all out there in 12 days. Thanks for coming on, Troy.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you there.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Steve. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more sport.
This is The Grill, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
So what's happening in the world of sport? Well, you're locked into Dubai Eye 103.8. This is The Grill. We're broadcasting live from Barassi, where the game is always on. I just want to bring you up to date with some live sport game. The only game really to report, the early kickoff in the English Football League, has finished goalless. That was Barnet against Coventry. We've got a couple of rugby games underway. We'll give you those updates in a moment, but not before the cricket. Mark Archer?
Yeah, Sri Lanka going well at Dubai International Cricket Stadium. It's the second day of the second test. It's the day-night test, so it's going to be going late into this evening. Sri Lanka currently 423/5. Star of the show is the opening batsman, who is getting close to a double century. Karunaratne is 192 not out. It's been a marathon innings. He's faced 393 balls. He's hit 19 fours and 1 6. Pereira is 41 not out, so Sri Lanka going really well, 423/5 at drinks on day two of the second test match.
Let's get over to your rugby now, because as I said, we've got a couple of early kickoffs, none more so than the Guinness Pro 14. Leinster taking on Munster. Mark Archer?
Yeah, 32 minutes gone in the first half of this All-Irish derby. Leinster 7, Munster 7. For Leinster, try to Rory O'Loughlin after 17 minutes was converted by the Irish fly half, Johnny Sexton, and then Ian Keatley struck back for Munster and he converted his try. So 7-7, 10 minutes to go towards half-time, Tom.
Half-time in the top 14 as well. Stade Francais are laying down a mark against Montpellier. Stade Francais lead by 20 points to 10. I'll get you the scorers on that one in just a few moments. We rudely interrupted Ross Crist's US sport wrap a little earlier on, so we're going back to it. Ross?
That's right, gentlemen. We are in week 5. We're in the thick of it, of the NFL season, and we have some great games on the docket. The Miami Dolphins will be hosting the Tennessee Titans. Titans come in at 2-2. Marcus Mariota, he's been bothered by a sore leg in this one, so we'll see which one this one will go. The San Diego Chargers are going against the New York Giants, two quarterbacks from the same draft class of 2004, Eli Manning going against Philip Rivers. Both of these teams don't have a win. They'll meet at MetLife Stadium. One team will leave this game 1-4. The other one will leave 0-5. So we'll see how this one goes. Then the San Francisco 49ers are heading to Indianapolis, where Brian Hoyer will try to pick up the first win of the season. When you think of the Indianapolis Colts, one name always comes to mind, and that is Peyton Manning, whose jersey will be retired before the start of this game.
I certainly realize the rarity of the occasion of a number being retired. I am the first Indianapolis Colts player to have the number retired, but I'm joining a list of Colts to have their number retired. It means a great deal. I'm tremendously honored and humbled.
Did you ever dream that one day there would be a statue erected of you outside a NFL stadium?
I didn't know you could still be alive to see a statue of you, so I've had a couple of physicals since then, just to be sure. I accept this on behalf of so many people. This is a we ceremony, induction, number retirement, statue unveiling. I am extremely honored. I am extremely humbled.
Peyton Manning there, who spent the better part of his career 13 seasons with the Indianapolis Colts, winning a Super Bowl for coach Tony Dungy with the Colts. He is the first Indianapolis Colt to have his jersey retired. There have been Baltimore Colts that have their jersey retired, but the first Indianapolis Colt to have his jersey retired. Elsewhere, the Thursday night game, or Friday morning here in the UAE, was the New England Patriots, the defending Super Bowl champions, heading down to Tampa Bay to take on Jameis Winston and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are owned by the Glazer family, who also own Manchester United. Well, famous Jameis put up a strong fight, and the Buccaneers had much of this game under wraps, but the Pats fended off this Bucs team. Tom Brady and company did what it took to win the game. However, Tom Brady still wants to see his offense put up more points in the future.
I hope we can score more points than we did tonight. We just didn't get the job done. But, hopefully we can just keep finding ways to win. And I've been a part of, I said the other day, a lot of teams that we didn't score many points and we won the game anyway. And there's games where we score a lot of points and we still got to win. It's just, that's what team football is all about. I mean, offense always isn't always going to have a great day. Defense always isn't going to have a great day. But in the end, you just got to figure out how to way to get a win. And we did that today.
Switching sports, we're going to go over to ice hockey because the defending Stanley Cup repeat defending Stanley Cup champions, the Pittsburgh Penguins, try to go for the three-peat this year. That'll be the first three-peat since the New York Islanders did this in the 80s. Hockey is the hardest sport statistically in North America to repeat in, so they'll get their start. They started off losing 10-1 in their opening game. But one city that finally has a team is Las Vegas. America's been a country since 1776, widely regarded as the biggest party town in America, Sin City, Las Vegas, and they finally have a professional sports team, the Golden Knights. And the Golden Knights opened up their season with a win against the Dallas Stars in Texas, winning 2-1. James Neal lifted the Golden Knights to a win in the team's team debut, but the team, of course, was playing with heavy hearts after last week's tragedy in Vegas.
I was at the concert on Friday, and then having passes to go back on Sunday, and I got a text on Sunday night that I was skating in the morning by myself, so I didn't end up going, and having friends there at the concert, and what happened is just sickening, and my prayers go out to everyone that was affected. And, it's something we've talked about, and just to give people a smile and something to be happy about, and for us going to see the first responders and the victims, and doing everything we can to help uplift this city and this community is what we're going to do, and it's a good start.
Las Vegas playing with heavy hearts. Everyone will be rooting for the Golden Knights this year. Not only are they a new team, but everyone in America has their thoughts and prayers with everyone out in Vegas. It is October, gentlemen, and you know what that means.
Halloween?
Mark Archer?
Baseball playoffs.
That's right. Baseball playoffs. That is right. It is time for the MLB playoffs, and things have been getting underway on the AL and NL side. The Houston Astros defeated the Boston Red Sox 8-2. The Houston Astros roll to a 2-0 series win. Kuchel gets the win in his first playoff start. The Cubbies, the defending World Series champions, the Chicago Cubs went into the nation's capital and defeated Steven Strasburg, who was pitching lights out. However, Kendricks was pitching just a little bit better. He won 3-0. The Cubs had 5 hits in that game. The LA Dodgers fended off the wild card winner, the Arizona Diamondbacks. LA Dodgers, of course, sponsored by Emirates Airlines. Clayton Kershaw got the victory in this one. Clayton Kershaw, of course, one of the best pitchers in the history of the game. But the most exciting game came in Cleveland. The Baby Bombers is what they're calling them, of the New York Yankees and their 27 world titles, the AL winners of the wild card, going against the Cleveland Indians, Terry Francona's Cleveland Indians team, which was coached the 2004 Boston Red Sox when they made their improbable World Series win. And the Cleveland Indians won it in a walk-off 9-8 thanks to their catcher Gomes.
Well, I was kind of supposed to try to get the bunt down. He threw me that slide. I was like, okay, no chance I'm going to get this down. I got to figure out some other way to do it. I was really just trying to get the ball the other way, get Jackson a third, and he threw one in there good enough where I could put it in play. And I mean, it was an unbelievable game overall. I think it's going to go our way no matter what. We got a tremendous team, tremendous heart back here. We don't quit. Well, I started celebrating right away, and then I figured, oh, man, Jackson's got to still score, so I just kept looking. But I don't know, man. It's a unreal feeling right now. We're just excited to go celebrate. Both of those guys in the middle of the lineup should be considered MVP guys, man. I mean, we're down 8-3, and we hit a grand slam. Even though we're still down 1, momentum is still on our side. We're gonna battle out, and then Bruce comes up with an unbelievable at-bat. Jackson gets on base against a tremendous guy that's hard to hold the bat, but then I just kind of do what I had to do.
There you have it, Gomes, the catcher for the Cleveland Indians. Cleveland Indians are probably most people's favorites coming out of the AL after winning 22 games straight and being coached by Terry Francona. Elsewhere, some other games coming up. Chicago Cubs look to extend their 1-0 lead over the Washington Nationals in the nation's capital. If you want to stay up for this game, first pitch will be at 1:38 a.m. local time Saturday, October 7th. Sunday, October 7th, tomorrow morning. Then Arizona taking on Los Angeles. That'll be at 5:08 a.m. tomorrow morning. Elsewhere, the following games, Houston will take their 2-0 lead to Boston, take it to the Green Monster in Fenway Park. That game will be played Sunday night at 10:38. And then Monday morning, the early hours of Monday morning, Cleveland will be heading to the Big Apple, heading into Joe Girardi's house in the Bronx, taking on the Baby Bombers in New York. That game will get started at 3:38 Monday morning.
Ross, Chris, bringing you up to date with all things U.S. sport. Appreciate that, Christo. Thank you very much indeed. You mentioned the Green Monster there. I'm wondering whether the Green Monster can roar down in South Africa around about 7 o'clock this evening. Why? Because they take on the Black Beast. Because it is South Africa against the All Blacks. There is no way the Boks are beating the All Blacks tonight.
Well, you know, looking at the last two results, Tom, where the All Blacks have scored a combined 114 points. They've scored 57 points in both the last two matches against the Springboks. It's tough to see anything but an All Black win tonight, but they do have a strong record in Cape Town at Newlands. They will be buoyed by a strong partisan crowd of Springbok supporters, and I'm sure they'll do their best to make them proud. But it's tough to see the Springboks getting past the All Blacks at 7:05. So get on down to Brasti. We'll be watching it on the big screen after the grill tonight. So Alistair Coutts there, the coach, under pressure after an inconsistent rugby championship, I fear to say. 2 draws against the Wallabies. He's got his wins against Argentina, but he's come off the back of a massive hiding against the All Blacks. He's made a few changes. He's shuffled his forward pack, particularly in the line-out. So he's brought in the regular flanker, Francois Lowe, to number 8 for the injured Uzair Kassim. Specialist lock, Peter Steph Dutoy, is moving into blindside flanker. And Luke de Jager will start at lock with captain Eben Estabeth. Well, not so many problems for Steve Hansen. He had the luxury of resting key players for this in preparation for this match. He sent 5 players directly to South Africa instead of sending them to Argentina to play. So back comes Liam Squire, Sam Whitelock, Sam Kane, Ryan Crotty and Lima Sopianga back into the squad. They were all resting that last match. So let's wait and see what happens. There is a bit of All Black pressure on some players, though, as there always is, and the public scrutiny in the form of Sonny Bill Williams, that debate will go on. Will he be around in 2 years' time in the next World Cup? Let's just have a quick listen to the preview of this match. It kicks off 7:05 down here at Brasti. Springboks at home taking on the All Blacks.
The Springboks have shuffled their pack ahead of their clash against the All Blacks at Newlands on Saturday. Luatiaga gets a start at lock, while Peter Steph Dutoy moves to flank to improve the box line-out options. Loosehead prop Stephen Kitsoff gets a start, with Tendai Mtawarira not available because of family reasons. Coach Alistair Kutsia says the box always prepared to win a test, and it's great to get a crack at the Kiwis again.
The last time the box played the All Blacks, some hard lessons were dealt out. Can the box improve? They have to. The pack sees a lot of change, with Francois Lowe starting at eighth man, with Dutoy and Sia Khaleesi on the flanks. The back line remains unchanged.
Whenever we prepare for test match rugby, we prepare to win. Not to upset anyone, but to win a test match. It's how you look at it. For us, it's work in progress. We get another opportunity, you know, within a month, space of a month, to play against the best in the world again. It's great. It's great to have that, to have a crack at them again.
Kitsoff gets an opportunity after having played a record 18 matches off the bench behind the Beast, who has 95 tests to his name. Uncapped tight head prop Wilker Lowe gets a spot on the bench.
Unfortunately, Tendai has got to take care of personal matters and family matters. And within our culture, it's important to make sure that he does take care of that first. Yeah, of course, we will be missing Beast, but it's a great opportunity for a player like Stephen Kitsoff to get a start.
Diago gets a well-deserved start at lock, with Franco Mostard reverting to the bench. Other forward substitutes include Chiliboy Ralapele and Trevor Inyakane.
Yeah, definitely excited for the weekend. It's been a while since I've actually started for the box, so... And yeah, it's a big occasion on Saturday, and yeah, hopefully we can do well as a team.
A win for the box would be a huge upset, something one hopes the box themselves believe they can achieve. Craig Murray, SABC News, Cape.
It's the final round of the 2017 Rugby Championship. The first match is the Springboks hosting the All Blacks at Newlands in Cape Town. 7:05, that will kick off. And then late in the early hours of tomorrow morning at 2:30 a.m. UAE time, it's the Wallabies travelling to Argentina to face the Pumas in that match. Both coaches, South Africa's Alistair Kutsia and New Zealand's Steve Hansen, were both in buoyant mood ahead in the press conference this week. This is what they both had to say about the Springboks taking on the All Blacks this evening.
There's not one way of beating the All Blacks. You've got to be unbelievably accurate. You've got to make sure that there's not just one plan. We've got to make good decisions. I think, like I say, you won't beat them by just getting penalties. So you have to score tries in order to beat any New Zealand team, and we saw that in Super Rugby as well. So the decision making is the biggest thing, and our game managers, we've spoken about that. There's a ball in hand approach. There's one or two other things that you'd like to have a look at, but we our DNA with this team has been together for 3 months, and it's the third week going, I think. You can see they're comfortable with ball in hand.
Well, if you know the All Blacks, you know they're under pressure all the time to win and win well, so no, it doesn't change anything there. The fact that we've won the championship is obviously pleasing, but we're playing one of our greatest foe, and one with a lot of history, and one that we have a lot of respect for, so it won't change how we prepare, and we're looking forward to the game.
The 57 out of just coming in. Now the psychologist is, I've got to be the psychologist when there's no one around. So that 57 is out of the system already. Therefore, we were unlucky not to have won last week. But coming back from such a big score, turn it around, and you play against a fantastic Wallaby side. If you look at Guinea, if you look at a guy got his 50th cap. If you look at the inside centre, Bennett Foley, if you look at the inside centre, Kurt Lebeel, it's in a season campaigner. He's back from Europe to play for them. They're 13 Kurundrani. The Hodge is a good quality fullback, and Falai at the back. So that was a classy side. And to come from that big loss in Albany and still, in a position to win it in the end, that has certainly turned the tables around and put the Albany match behind us.
Yeah, I thought they were pretty dangerous, actually, and if they'd just been a little bit more accurate a couple of times, they would have scored some more points. So I think if they continue to keep doing what they're doing and keep growing that and get better at it, they'll you know, the type of game they're going to play suits them quite a bit, and it'll make them a dangerous opposition.
Most guys would have been here at some point, but I was thinking about this one, it's my fifth time in 2 years, so just based on those quarterfinals and the way the round robin's been, to be feel pretty lucky to be here. I think it's probably one of the destinations in South Africa the boys look forward to when you see it on the schedule, so no, the weather's pretty primo at the moment, and hopefully we can have a good week. And I think it's a late afternoon kickoff, which we're always a fan of, so that'll be nice.
What do you think the boys look forward to? Cape,
look around, Ross. I don't know, yeah. You know, we've got the waterfront, it's just a beautiful location, really. We often head across to Camps Bay for a dinner or two. You know, there's just plenty to do outside of the hotel and outside of rugby, so that any downtime we do have, we can make the most of.
South African tourism ambassador Sam Kane there with his thoughts on this evening's game.
Yeah, and he's been there a bit longer. As we just said, he was sent with four other players to South Africa early. They weren't taken down to Argentina for the match against the Pumas last week, and Steve Hansen, the coach, sent Sam Kane, Liam Squire, Sam Whitelock, Ryan Cotty and Lima Supawanga straight down to South Africa for a bit of extra acclimatisation. They'll be having fun down there in Camps
like
Bay
it, yeah.
Out for dinner waiting for
walk
the team
the front, you know.
Waiting for the team to fly over from Argentina. So yeah, that match, 7:05 kickoff. Get on down to Brasti. We'll be here after the grill watching it. Springboks fresh from a 57-0 defeat last time they played the All Blacks. I don't think it's going to be that many points between the two teams this evening, Tom.
Just before we go off, I just want to wrap up on all things FIFA World Cup. Qualifiers ongoing at the moment. Crucial qualifiers. Final weekend of qualifiers. We will this time next week know who has automatically qualified, and we'll also know who's in the eliminators and playoffs for FIFA Club World Cup. One of the big stories of the week before we move on to today's is the continuing bad form of Argentina. Now, is it conceivable that we could have a World Cup next year in Russia without Argentina, multiple previous winners, and without Lionel Messi?
Arguably the biggest soccer star on the planet, Lionel Messi, may not be playing in the World Cup. Argentina had a 0-0 draw against Peru, which means they have zero margin for error moving forward. Robin, would Messi missing the World Cup remove him from the best ever debate, which he's in with Cristiano Ronaldo?
Remove seems strong. But it does hurt, because when you're talking about the best ever, not one of the best ever, people start to really nitpick. I mean, is it fair to blame one individual for a sport where 11 guys are on the field at the same time? That is tough to do. I happen to lean Ronaldo in that argument because of the size. Maybe it's a bit of a Durant or Curry, who would you rather have sort of conversation. But it definitely hurts his chances, because if someone's making the case for Messi, the easy comeback is, if he was so good, why didn't they make the World Cup?
Well, let's be honest. Ronaldo is also in danger of missing the World Cup. Portugal is against the ropes also.
This will be a terrible World Cup. No United States, no Messi, no Ronaldo.
Yeah, I don't know how much Fox is going to like that as a broadcast rights, but I think that this would absolutely do nothing to Messi's legacy. I think that you can understand, you can point to all of these different reasons why Argentina is struggling, and I would not point to Messi as any one of them. He is actually playing fantastic. He is setting up his teammates. They are not finishing. I mean, how much more can he do? It reminds me of after the Super Bowl, we saw Giselle running after Tom Brady after they lost to the Giants a second time, and someone said, "Hey, Giselle, what did you think of the game?" And she said, "He can't throw the ball and catch the ball." You know, it was like this famous quote about Brady. It's kind of the same thing. Like, what are you? Can he single-handedly win a game? No, it's impossible. It's too much to expect, even from someone who's considered the best ever. I'd also point to the fact that Argentina has gone through three different managers of their national team since they lost to Germany in the last Men's World Cup. And think about it. We talked a lot about how the Atlanta Falcons, you know, how could they come back from blowing that big Super Bowl lead that they had, and how would it damage the team? I mean, think about what happened to Argentina. They lose that match against Germany, and now they have 4 years to think about it, and they keep changing managers. I feel like there's no cohesion here, and I feel like this team, I mean, I am shocked that they would be missing, that they could miss the World Cup, but let's look a little bit inside what's happening. Maybe it isn't that shocking.
Must win on Wednesday against Ecuador, otherwise they do not qualify. Even if they do win against Ecuador, looks like they've got to go.
Tough task then. They've got to get under Wellington, face the mighty All Whites, undefeated in the last World Cup campaign they were at. So, yeah, you'd expect Argentina to get through this tie and then get through automatically, or if they have to go into the playoffs,
you'd expect them to beat Peru at home.
Yeah, well, exactly. And it's tough because they've got so much world-class talent, particularly up front for them. They're an embarrassment of riches with strikers who are scoring and leading goal scorers in all the European competitions, yet they can't score a goal for the national team. It's a strange situation. But I think if you're a neutral fan, you want to see Argentina at the FIFA World Cup.
Yeah, for sure. Just bring us up together. I know you mentioned a bit earlier about the US progress at the moment for World Cup qualification.
Yeah, they won last night 4-0, so they moved to second place in the CONCACAF. So they will most likely be making their way to the World Cup. They have one more game against, I believe it's against Trinidad and Tobago, who are all but out of it of World Cup qualifying. So it should be nothing but a walkthrough. Christian Paul Sedek, the Borussia Dortmund young striker, striked really, really early for the United States team. He's been playing lights out. Also, Josie Altidore, a striker that's needed to play quite well for them, has been stepping up for them, and he stepped up in their previous game. So those are their two key players, along with Timmy Howard back in goal. If those three guys can get it together, hopefully Bruce Arena's chances are at least improved slightly from what they were a month ago, when a lot of people thought the U.S. might miss out on this World Cup.
Group A looks set to go down to the final round. Four teams still in contention to finish top. Group leaders France travel to Bulgaria tonight, holding 1-point advantage over Sweden, who host Luxembourg this evening. Let's just work through these games for you. Sweden host Luxembourg. That one's an 8 o'clock kickoff. The other 8 o'clock kickoffs, Faroe Islands against Latvia and Bosnia-Herzegovina against Belgium. The other games all kicking off at 10:45. Belarus against Netherlands, Bulgaria against France, Andorra take on Portugal, Switzerland against Hungary. We have got Cyprus against Greece, and there's also Gibraltar against Estonia kicking off at 8 o'clock. All those games have been shown on Abu Dhabi Sports if you want to watch those. A lot to look forward to then in the coming weeks. That's about it from the team down here at the Grill. Just remains to me to say a big thank you to all the team behind the scenes, to Benj, to Hector and all the crew here, to Saj, Elaine and all the crew back there. Thanks also to you, Russ Christo.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks also to you, Mark Archie. You're sticking around.
Thank you, Thomas. Yeah, I'm sticking around for the rugby. Just give you a couple of cricket updates. The T20 International in Ranchi has just got underway. Australia put into bat by India, 55 for 1. David Warner is the wicket dismissed by Bob Kumar. Finch is 29, not out. Maxwell is 17, not out. So Australia 55 for 1 after 6 of their 20 overs. And just a quick update from up the road at Dubai International Cricket Stadium. Karuna Ratne, who's batted almost 2 days up there, has been dismissed for 196. Bowled by Wahab Riaz. He's missed out on his double century, but Sri Lanka still going well. 437 for 6 at Dubai International Cricket Stadium. Day 2. Get up there if you're looking for something to do tonight, because the lights will come on. The Ring of Fire up there wouldn't be a bad place to watch some Test cricket.
Indeed. Mark Archer, thank you very much indeed to you. Thanks to all of you for your thoughts and comments as well. We're back again next week between the hours of 3 and 6. As Mark was saying, there is an embarrassment of riches when it comes to viewing sport this evening. Here in the UAE, you've got live international cricket going on. Rugby Union is underway. There's also Rugby Championship just around the corner. We've got the World Cup qualifiers going on from 8 o'clock and at 10:45. There's tennis, golf and much, much more. But if there's one game that I recommend you watch, it is the grand final. Super League comes to a rather fitting final, and let us just build to that moment. It's Castleford against Leeds, an all-Yorkshire affair, and it promises to be a cracker at Old Trafford.
Rugby League means to the town of Castleford everything. When we won the Challenge Cup, it's what the town needed and the club provided. I remember coming back in an open-top bus and displaying the trophy, and you could not move in the town.
Leeds is a big sporting city, one of the giants in the north. Rugby League is like a religion in the city, and Leeds Rhinos is a brand. It means you're a winner, but it also means you look after each other and you support each other, and it's a place for everybody.
If you take a good look behind success, you'll find the same consistent qualities. Qualities in one's character that make one strive for a goal with a standard of unmatched excellence. Darrell's injected that into this squad. It's a fairy tale season.
Leeds have got their own fairy tale ending to send these two out as winners. Rob Burrow, Cass lad, Leeds legend. He will score your points, he will make breaks, he will bust tackles, he scares the opposition to death.
It's a brilliant Burrow try! A fantastic Rob Burrow try!
Danny Maguire, local boy, done very, very good. Super League has never seen a support player like Danny.
Here is Sinfield, slides the kick in! What a try from Maguire!
Big players will step up, heroes will come out of the game.
To win this grand final would change this club forever.
couldn't want any more on grand final night than to watch Danny and Rob go out as winners.
Has Casper got this stomach to win this grand final? Absolutely.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.